You are now tuned into Shotgun Sports USA, powered by Winchester. Recorded in the U.S.
and streaming all over the world.
We talk to shotgun shooters from all disciplines, championship-winning coaches, gun clubs, world-class target setters, vendors, and industry-leading companies that fuel the sport. If you are into clay target sports, you are at the right place for insider information from some of the best in the world every single week. Remember to subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and connect with us on social media. You can also catch our episodes on ShotgunSportsUSA.com. Being a brand name in the clay target industry, Rick Hemingway has said, "Have you ever noticed almost all major sporting events are being run by Pro-Matic traps?" Think about that statement for a minute. He's right, and you may want to consider that before making your next purchase. Rick is the largest Pro-Matic dealer specializing in individual and commercial trap sales. Rick provides skeet, trap, five-stamp, and sporting clays, designs, installs, and service. He also offers accessories such as solar panels, wireless release systems, as well as the hottest item on the market, the ClayBot by Rainier Products. Visit www.backwoodsquailclub.com or give him a call at 843-546-1466. Castellani shooting vests are manufactured in Italy and internationally recognized by elite shooters as the most popular lightweight shooting vests on the market. Castellani vests are especially known for their Italian styling and superior craftsmanship and quality, making them a vest of choice for all shooting disciplines. Ultimate Shooting Accessories is the exclusive supplier of Castellani vests in the United States. Visit ultimateshootingaccessories.com for more information and to place your order.
This week we have one of the best gun fitters and stock makers in the world. He has world champions, national champions, U.S. Open champions, and many others shooting his stocks. There's a reason they do, and we're going to find out why. I'm Justin Barker with Shotgun Sports USA. Please welcome my guest to the show, Mr. Jim Greenwood. Jim, how are you?
Doing good. How are you tonight?
Good. For those that don't know who you are, which there's not a lot, I'm sure, but some new people in the sport that may not know who you are, kind of tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, I've been full-time 35 years now working on guns. Started out doing rifles for the last 30 years almost, all been shotguns. So just building custom stocks is my specialty, fitting people, building stocks, pattern stocks, all of the above, trying to keep getting better all the time, trying to expand it all.
You're also a gunsmith, right?
Yeah, so I went to gunsmith school, trained gunsmith. Do very little of it anymore because I'm so backed up building custom stocks, but I do a little bit of high-end gunsmithing work when I have to.
What is considered high-end gunsmithing work?
Well, just on the higher end guns. I don't do general repair on just the average, 22 rifles and shotguns coming in. But, I can work on somebody needs Prozzi rebuilt or try and keep parts for those and Berettas and work on some of the Krieghoff stuff when I have to. I'm not authorized on Krieghoff, but I can repair the things that they need to when they come in.
Why don't you build custom rifle stocks anymore? Is it just because the shotgun stocks have taken off and you just don't have time for it, or you didn't like it as much?
Yeah. Because the shotgun work has taken off and so busy doing that, almost a change of gears to try and do the rifles and then so much to get started back into it. And the struggle, I had an Englishman that I worked beside several years ago when I first moved to Oklahoma in the mid-80s to work. He kept telling me to do shotgun work. There's so much more shotgun work out there. So I started studying what I could from him, learning from him to learn more about shotguns, because all my background, my apprenticeship was all building custom rifles. A lot of it pertains over building, doing the custom stock work. Everything kind of translates right into the shotgun work, but it's a little bit different mindset. So I just kept trying to learn all I could from Jack Rose, Englishman. And then I started shooting sporting clays and was hooked on that, and have spent the last 30-some years trying to get better and figure how to fit better and how to make shotguns work better for people in this sport.
Yeah. Well, moving into shotgun sports, you've got world champions and national champions and U.S. Open winners and some of the best shotgun shooters in the world using a Greenwood stock. And there's got to be a reason for that. And what is it?
I hope I can do the fit right, get them set up, not just the quality of wood we're using, but get them fit, gun shooting where they're looking comfortable in their shoulder, where they can be more consistent overall with everything. And not only trying to do it for that top level shooter, but try and put that same effort in everyone to come down, trying to make it the more comfortable you can make it, hopefully the more consistent they can mount and learn the gun and get the feel of it and really trust that everything's happening and working right for them.
You've kind of earned the title, I guess, so to speak, of, from some of the best in the game, that you are probably one of the best shotgun fitters in the world. So in your opinion, how do you feel you've earned that title?
Lots of trial and error, learning, adapting, seeing, watching people shoot, shooting myself, learning what feels right, looks right, and just spend a lot of time, even when I'm out shooting, watching people, what's happening with their fits, looking hand positions, head position, everything. Always taking note, keeping mental notes at least on seeing different things all the time and what I can incorporate and what can make me better and help the shooters that much better all the time.
What do you take into consideration in your process to make sure that a stock fits someone perfectly?
When they start in with me, we're going to start off with a grip, try and get the grip curve placement, get our finger or the shooter's finger properly onto the trigger where they, some of them know where they like it, some don't know. If they're a new shooter, try and help them out with that of what's going to be the right trigger position or the right position for their trigger or finger on the trigger so we can get better trigger control. The gun will go off when we want it to, not wrap too far around it, not stretching out too much, but just making it everything in control there. So we spent a lot of time in that grip curve, the comb nose placement, palm swell, and getting it all sized and curved right so it all just lays, so their hand can lay in there and lay on the trigger right, so they don't have to have a death grip on the shotgun trying to hang on and trying to keep their hand from moving around. So just trying to lay that all in there so it's nice and relaxed, comfortable, but they have everything in the proper position, the wrist in the proper position, so we're not trying to, have an awkward angle on our wrist and our hand and hurt that, everything else. So just paying a lot of attention, a lot of trial and error, fitting the grip, lots of back and forth, me watching and getting feedback from the shooter as well, kind of how and where the grip is fitting and sitting in their hand.
Now, you're talking about your finger touching the trigger. How should your finger touch the trigger?
Ideally, where I like it is ahead of the first joint on the pad, especially for a new shooter. That's where I'm trying to get them. So we have, when you go to move your finger, first thing that moves is the tip of your finger. So we're trying to get it so they don't have to think about, pulling the trigger or anything else. It becomes natural that can pull on it. Some people have shot a long time. Some people like it deeper on their finger. I take that into account if they've shot a long time and that's where they're going to end up. So we kind of work around that. Some are further out. So part of it depends on some of the experience of the shooter, on what they kind of like and what they feel, and then just working around that. New shooters, like I said, try and get it positioned where it's going to be more comfortable for them, then get better consistent trigger pull, everything else off the gun.
The palm swell, you're talking about sitting your hand on the stock. How should someone want a palm swell? How should they want that to fit?
It should fill up their hand without being too full, but be able to fill their hand to help kind of lock it in place. So when their hand lays on the swell, they can just naturally reach their finger to the trigger in the right position instead of trying to put their finger on the trigger and move around. So when we're out shooting, I spend a lot of my time watching that as we're shooting as well. If they're slipping and moving their hand around and trying to adjust, we know we don't have it quite right. If they're not thinking about it, they can just naturally let their hands slide onto the gun, fit the gun, and naturally go into the trigger, everything feels pretty good and looks good. So I spend a lot of my time, not only in the shop, but a lot of it is done shooting because I want to see what happens under recoil. I want to see what happens when they're actually approaching a target, everything else, and what they're doing with their hand. A lot of people that haven't had a swell or something properly start tend to ride up on it, so I have to keep reminding them to let their hand go to the palm swell, then go to the trigger, and learn to, you know, trust that area of it, let their hand relax and stay in there without, you know, having to have a death grip and moving all around on it.
How does someone's hand move on the stock when they don't have a gun, when they don't have a palm swell?
A lot of times it will, under recoil, the hand tends to slide forward, slide up the stock. So then when they go for the second shot, their finger is now in a different position on the trigger. So we get a different trigger pull, different dynamics of what's happening there. Some people don't realize it, other people, or so then they're having to reshift their hand. If they realize it, they're reshifting their hand, trying to get it back while they're trying to approach and move to a second target, that a lot of times you don't have time to make those adjustments on quick pairs. So we spend a lot of time. That's why through the fitting process, try and do a fair amount of shooting to see what's actually happening with the gun, with the stock under recoil, to see what tweaks and adjustments, everything else we'll need to do throughout the process.
We've talked in previous discussions and podcasts about what it takes to build a stock for someone. And everyone knows you take a piece of wood and you make a stock. Okay, well, that's probably the easiest part for you maybe, but let's touch on the important part of why someone needs a stock and how a custom stock benefits them and when they need a stock. So why does someone need a custom stock?
Depending on your body shape, body style, some people can make factory stocks work for them. Factory stocks have to build them to a kind of generic one size fits all deal. So some people fall in a category where they can make a factory stock work and make it happen right. The majority of the people can't do that, but they learn to adapt to it, but that's not the best way. The best way is to make the gun fit you, not you to fit the gun.
Right.
So they need to have a certain little bit of level of shooting behind them with that particular gun, I think, can have be learning the mount and learning what it takes how to mount the gun. Some, and we work through that process while we're building the stock. If they not have a real consistent mount, we try and help them with the mount in the process of where, how we want the butt in our shoulder, how everything's coming in, how we're going to bring the gun to our face. Several things going along with it just to help them be more consistent and more lined up and in tune with the gun. Try to get the head in the right position. The head has to, you know, start a little bit forward and leaned into the gun, and, you know, just trying to get all those, that because we don't have time to make those adjustments when a target's flying. So we start when we're setting the stock up, getting all that lined up. So once we have the grip set, so we know that hand is in position right, then we can start going to the length and start working the cast and the comb height down and keep adjusting that in and keep making it comfortable and working through the mount with that whole process to make it more consistent and getting the stock where we want it to be, get the full face of the pad on our shoulder to help absorb recoil properly all down through the line.
Recoil is a big thing with me. I noticed that the stock that I have from you, it feels like it recoils zero. But if I go back and I was to shoot another factory gun, I feel like I get a lot more recoil. Why is that?
It's the just the dimensions of the stock, from the drop from the comb nose to the heel. Sometimes it's the length and the pitch angle. Pitch angle can play a big role in it, that the only part of the pad is engaging the shoulder under recoil, so we're spreading the recoil out, you know, in an inch area instead of, you know, we got a 5 1/4 inch depth pad. We're trying to get the whole face of the pad on our shoulder, and then trying to get the muzzle jump out, or trying to get the gun coming straighter back into our shoulder to take the felt recoil out. So if we spread that out, it feels so much softer. The gun's not hitting us in the face. Muzzles aren't jumping. Everything that, you know, kind of makes the gun almost out of control at times, we're trying to control all that coming straight back to help the felt recoil be a lot less and our body to absorb it so much better.
That's amazing that a stock can do all of that. You know, and you were talking just a second ago that, you know, shoot a gun for a little while with a factory setup, and then we'll build you a pattern stock for that gun.
And part of it, you know, I went right to pattern stock for some people because they're so far off. The factory fit is so far off that they can't even begin to get a consistent or even comfortable mount. So then we've got to do something so they can actually even handle the gun, shoot the gun, and even starting to learn. So that's where a pattern stock works very good. So it's a stock that we can make adjustments to as we need to once they start learning the mount, whether the length is just way off for them or the grips. I've had them wear with a lot smaller hands. They can't reach the trigger properly, so now the hand is rolling. Their hands way up on the stock, even just trying to reach the trigger. Well, they can't ever get a consistent mount because they're fighting so many different variables all the time. So those work great to build them into a pattern. So now they start getting the feel and knowing what it should be like, their hand in the proper position, and now they can start getting a more consistent mount and working through things. So now it's like, okay, this is what it should feel like, and then we can start making minor adjustments, and so head position's right, everything else is right, according to once we start getting everything better for them so they can learn to mount the gun properly.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you've got someone that's shooting a stock gun, why not go ahead and fit it to them instead of them fitting themselves to the gun?
Right. And that's a lot of it. So you hope they've shot a little bit and learned a little bit, but yeah, some of them are so far off from what the factory fit's going to be that, you know, then we need to be able to do something to make it work right and make it enjoyable. Otherwise, you know, those are ones that go, this hurts too much. Why do I want to keep doing this when it hurts and I can't hit anything? They're going to quit. Yeah. So we're trying to make it better and show that it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to hurt. It doesn't have to bruise our face and cut our face and do all kinds of things, that it can be enjoyable to shoot without having to endure all that.
I'm sure a lot of people have this same question about a new stock. If they're used to shooting a gun that they feel comfortable with and moving on to getting a new stock, you know, how am I going to shoot with that new stock? What, you know, I don't know if I really want to do it because I might start missing, or the opposite might start hitting more. But you told me, and I'm kind of a perfect example of this, is you've got to trust, you know, what I've built.
Yeah.
You know, I've looked at the way you've mounted the gun. I looked at the way you shoot the gun, and you're going to have to trust it. And you told me that. And yeah. I didn't really know what that meant until recently. And I kind of wanted you to explain that, you know, what that means to trust the stock you've built.
Instead of second guessing and trying to, you know, when they start shooting it, you know, looking down the barrel, trying to line things up and making sure it's lined up. Well, once we start doing that, we're not going to hit anything with the old stock, new stock, anything else. We've got to, we're going to have it on a pattern board. Then we're also going to shoot some targets that are going to give me the read on, as long as you're bringing the gun to the face right and the head's in the right position, then the gun's shooting where we're looking. We just have to learn to trust that as long as we do everything good back here, the gun will shoot where we want it to be. So you start checking it and second guessing. Well, you know, it's not going to work right. It's not going to feel right. So you're going to miss. But it's also, it's going to do that with any stock that you try as well. So it's learning, you know, trust that, you know, the length is right, the pitch is right, the cone's right, the cast is right, to now just go out and execute the shot, work on seeing the target properly. Once we can do that and trust that the gun, when we do the proper mount, the gun's in the right position for everything to happen for us. Because if you try and check it with anything, you're going to miss. Because as soon as you try and check, man, that looked really good. Especially when I hear people say that looked really good, odds are they looked at the barrel. They checked the lead, checked where the barrel was with the target. When that happens, our barrel stops, slows down, etc. We've taken all our focus off the target. We're not going to hit the target anymore.
Yeah.
So that's where the trust comes in, trusting that, okay, everything is fitting back here. Hands right, combs right, everything. So now I can learn to focus harder on target, trust my eyes seeing the target, and trust the process of how you shoot, whether you're whatever method you're shooting, but trust that it's all working good out there. I can just approach the target the way I need to and let everything happen then.
So if I bring a stock gun into you and I mount it for you and I'm used to seeing a little bit of ramp in my gun with a factory stock on it, do you want to build the new stock the same way? Or do you want to, how do you alter that?
A little bit. You know, some guys want to see a fair amount of barrel. I'm also going to take that to the pattern board and kind of see, and some of them had one at the open, you know, on the board, it's shot high. It's kind of what he said he liked. So now I'm going to go shoot targets with it and slow, throw some flat crossers and throw some looping birds and teal and trap birds and everything. And now I'm going to see more of how he's approaching the target to where the gun's impacting. You know, if he's, you know, we're on the pattern board and he's seeing way above the barrel and we start throwing some low targets and he's missing everything over top, I know we got to come down.
Right.
If he still is centered up and likes that feel, whether he's consciously, he floats it, he has to float a target a little bit, whether he consciously knows it or not, that's, you know, so I'm just going back and getting reference off that of, you know, so I spend time watching him and then watching his barrel approach the target to seeing what he's, if he's trying to do something odd or something different to get the impact point where he wants it. If he's just naturally going and approaching a target the way he wants to see it and we're breaking it consistently from all different angles and heights, then I can live with the impact point that he has. But I want to make sure, instead of just setting gun way high, I want to make sure he can approach and shoot a target that way. So I'm going to, like I said, try and throw some low flat incomers, different things that are going to try and set him up to see if he's shooting high, so I can make sure of what our impact point and what our sight picture and what our look is. So I try and approach several different targets. So when you come to my shop, I have clay bots we can set up, so I can set up all different angles real fast of different scenarios of targets, so I can get a read on what I think is happening with our gun, whether it's high or when you miss a target, did you miss the line of the target, or was it because our impact is still too high, or you're not. You can also go the same way. You get the stock too low, then they start picking their head up. So it's kind of a fine line of tweaking that stock down to the right height, of seeing where they want to be without getting too low, getting them behind. Then they start peeking, cheating their head up, and then we're all over the place again. So it's a lot of back and forth, reading, seeing where their head is and what they're seeing, trying to view what how they're impacted and what they want to feel.
How long does this process take?
The pattern process?
Yeah.
Normally, I have this pattern inletted and ready for the shooter to fit their receiver when they come in. So normally we start at 8:30 roughly on average in the morning in my shop. Normally by 11 o'clock we're shooting targets with it, pattern board, and then trying a few targets and making adjustments. So normally by 3:30, 4 o'clock, I have it sanded out, finish on it, new pad on it, and go shoot a few more targets and ready for you to be on your way. That's the average deal. So normally about, with the person in the shop, normally figure 5 to 6 hours with some shooting time in there. And I normally have about 2 to 2.5 hours into a pattern before the customer gets there, with me getting it roughed in, inletted, and all lined up and ready for them and ready for their gun.
So for anyone listening that's interested in doing this, the first thing you're going to do is meet Jim either at his place in Kansas or either when he's on the road at one of these big shoots, and you have an appointment set up and you go in there with your gun and you're going to take the factory stock off and you're going to put this other stock on, this big chunk of wood, and you're going to grind it down to where they can mount it for the first time. It's going to feel uncomfortable because the wood's so big. The question I've got is, when you go into your shop or wherever you're at, and you start mounting this gun, the mount always seems to be different while while I'm with you versus me out shooting.
Yes.
And you probably agree with that. So yes. If someone wants to mount the gun like they do when they shoot, what's the easiest way to do that? Do they need to put their vest on? Do they need to come in there and hold that gun? How do you get it to simulate what you're doing out shooting?
At the beginning, I'm not worried as much. When they're setting the grip up, if it's way too long, I'm going to trim a little bit of the length off just so they can kind of, so I like when I'm setting the grip up, I like it kind of to be on the shoulder so I can see the arm position, the wrist position, everything else, instead of just holding it down to their side because I can't see how everything's lining up through the shoulder, elbow, to the wrist, everything else. And it's going to be way high and way bulky and everything, especially the first few grips with the hand, because I try and leave them, especially I've never met the person before. I don't know the size of their hand, how big it's going to be, so I try and leave it fairly large. Right. And it starts shaping in fairly quick, knocking the edges off, getting the curve right, and it really starts transforming. A lot of experimenting back and forth with the shooter at the beginning. And some of them try and get their head position right, and I try and tell them, I'm not worried about any of that yet. I know it's not going to be, you're not looking down, and you're not, and none of it feels right back there. Right now we're just concentrated on the hand. Then we'll start working that back in. And then it's just watching them. Some people have a struggle mounting in the shop, mount way different in the shop than they do when they go shoot targets. So that's one of the reasons I go to a pattern board. Yeah. What it gives me feedback on as much as anything is impact point is watching them mount when we're actually firing a gun. Where does your head position go? Where do you put it up on your shoulder? I've had people come in and I try and leave them big enough. If I have to make a Monte Carlo, I can. Well, they start mounting it all over on their shoulder and we're kind of all over the place and still trying to guess what we need to do. It's like, all right, let's go shoot the gun. I want to see what happens when you're actually approaching something. And now all of a sudden they're in a whole different position. Again, they're in a different position on their shoulder, their face different. So I'm making notes of that. So when we go back in, I'm like, and they mount different. I'm like, that's not how you mount when you shot, though. So this is how you mount when you shot. So let's work off of this feel, because this is what you're going to go to whenever that happens. And then some of them catch on real quick and go, okay, yeah. So it's like, so don't throw the gun way up on your shoulder. So get into it the way we need to and approach it. How we're approaching a target, everything else. So some people mount the same inside and actually shooting, but a lot of times that's not the case.
You whittle it on down is what I call it. Yep. You get to working with all those tools you have. Everything's done by hand, which is amazing to me. You don't have machines that, print out a stock for you and all of that. You have to actually do it by hand.
Yeah, I use a old plane and rasps and everything else, getting it set up right. If the wood will plane, I can get rid of a lot of wood pretty quick with a plane. Some blanks don't like the grain angles wrong, so you don't plane, so I ain't spend up filing and rasping and off. But we can get the wood off.
Okay, and you get it all set up for the person to go shoot. Okay, you go shoot it, and they feel that it's too high or low. So say it's too low. What do you do to fix that?
If we're too low, now we've got to go Bondo or something different because I don't have enough wood to make the adjustments in. So,
right.
So hopefully I stop early enough. Once we start getting close, and I think we're kind of looking over maybe mounting a little different, I'm going to go to the pattern board to kind of see so I can watch them out shooting and see what's happening. Because I've gotten fooled that way a little bit. Mm-hmm. They hold their head way up, and it's like, okay, take it down, we'll go out. And now we go mount on a target, and we're way completely in a different. And it's like, oh, no. So at that time, I have to revert to Bondo. I'm not, Bondo has its place. I'm not a big Bondo guy, but there are times I have to use it to fill in voids or fill in, getting the height back up and getting it blended in the way we need to.
Yeah, and that's not really that big a deal on a pattern because that's what it's for,
Right. Yeah, we're making the adjustments what we need to make it right for the end result. So if we have to use the Bondo, you just have to be careful, in my opinion, with Bondo. Bondo can get real heavy if you use a lot of Bondo, so we can throw the dynamics out of the gun. So also trying when I'm building the pattern to balance the stock, so we're getting the right weight in the buttstock to the same balance and feel that we're going to strive for on the final stock. So once we transition from a pattern stock to the final stock, we're not, it's like, okay, it feels the same, but the dynamics of the gun, the balance of the gun, the feel of the gun is way different. So it's hard to shoot that gun as well. So the goal with my patterns are to have all the dimensions set right, but also the balance point and the feel right. So when we go transition to the final stock, we can set the balance point up. So basically the only difference in feel we're going to have is from a smooth stock to a checkered stock. Everything else should feel the same, move the same, handle the same, et cetera, on down through.
Yeah. So the pattern's done. Do you recommend the customer sanding on the pattern stock themselves?
I would like them to talk to me first so we can discuss what they think they're seeing or what they think they need to do. Some go ahead and do it themselves, and sometimes if they don't trust themselves, they send it back to me and I'll lower the stock or change. The biggest thing it probably changes is the size of the palm swell over time. I think people tend to have me leave it a little larger because some of them haven't had a swell, so it fills up their hand, and after a little time go, it's just a little bit big. So trim that down slightly is probably the biggest change I make on any of my patterns. And it's very slight. It doesn't take very long. It's just those stages. It's just a 16th of an inch makes a world of difference in the size of the swell and the circumference of the grip, everything else.
How long do you recommend them shoot it?
That's kind of a caveat. It's normally 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. Part of that is that's about my backlog, it seems, at times, to before I can get it in to even start. One man shop, so I can get, especially when I traveled a lot this spring, I got way behind because I'm always on the road building patterns and getting ready to go on the road and build patterns. So I get behind on some of the final stocks, but that's normal rule is you need to shoot it for a while just to help me get work through my backlog. Cause I can't, if you shoot it in a month later, say I'm ready to go. I'm still behind on building everybody else's stock, so I can't get to it that fast.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the catch that way of you need to shoot it a while till we get in rotation to get. So people go, well, I'll send it to you in your slow time. Well, I don't have a slow time. It's busy year round with even traveling through the winter. And normally after nationals, I normally still gotta go out to South Carolina to Will Fennell's and work in December and carry through. So there's no if you're going to try and find my downtime, there isn't any. We just got to get the schedule worked in and get it going.
You'll hear people say, well, Jim takes, you know, he takes a while to build a final stock. Well, there's a reason for that, because everybody wants to go to him, number one. And number two, he's a one-man show. And Jim, from what I can gather, you don't have anyone helping you because you, this is what I think now. You don't have anyone helping you because you don't think that anyone will put out the quality that you probably want to put out. So you just keep it a one-man show. Is that right?
Yes, basically, because I've had, you know, some people do odds and end work for me in times past, but I still check it and go over it, and it's like, because my name's on it at the end, so it's hard for me to not go over things and do things the way that I do them.
Yeah.
I've always kind of done that from doing all my sanding, finish work, checkering, everything. Like I said, sometimes it gets a little overwhelming trying to get everything done, but it just controls the product the way I want it controlled and done. Like I said, sometimes it gets a little overwhelming, but that's the way I've done it for 35 years, and it's hard to change off that too, I guess. And the difference between, so we talked about time on building the pattern stock. So the difference transitioning into a final stock, on finals I normally build a four end with it. So I transitioned from that with my original time, so where you can call 8 hours, into a pattern. I normally spend about 30 to 40 hours on a final stock from start to finish, a buttstock, four end, finish, checkered, everything. So that's why they take a lot longer, just more sanding time, more detail time, more inletting time to do it better. The sanding, a lot more sanding process going in, getting everything trued up, lined up, and then finish. You know, I spend a week getting my finish, depending on whether we're doing the polyurethane finish or an oil finish, depending on how much time and turnaround time that takes. You know, a good oil finish, depending on the humidity, is going to take me a couple weeks to get done properly, up to 3 weeks if everything, you're getting everything dried right. The poly finish can take me a week to get between coats and sandings and everything dressed down and all cured out as well. And then going into checkering, you know, my basic checkering patterns are, you know, roughly minimum probably 8 hours up to, you know, I've spent up to 14, 16 hours checkering a stock, depending on the layout and the pattern and how intense and diverse it gets.
Yeah, that's what I, you know, we were talking about this the other day, is I didn't realize how many coats of finish goes onto a final stock.
Yeah.
And I think you told me 9.
On my spray finish, yes, on the polyurethane, I'd spray 9. Like an oil finish, there's going to be 15 to 20 coats on there with more drying time in between, just trying to get pores filled up and sealed and sanded and then get the final coats built up. And there's lots of time. A lot of time there's, you know, most of that's drying time. The actual hands-on isn't a lot. You know, 90% of that or more is drying time, but you have to let it dry good or you're not going to get the proper finish. You're going to keep pulling finish out of the pores, everything else, you try and rush it and go through too fast. So it can be very slow for tedious process.
Compare the two finishes, since we're on that topic. Which is better and which holds up better and which do you prefer?
I used oil finishes for 25 of the first years I did this. I was a believer in the oil finish. And then I started playing around, toying with the polyurethane finishes. For these competition guns, I think the poly finish is a better, more durable finish. We're more weather variety. I have a guy say, I'm not going to shoot in the rain. Well, you're not going to shoot any big tournaments if you're never going to shoot in the rain. Because if you get squatted and it's raining or drizzling, you're going to have to go out or you give up your fees and go home. But, you know, different from the hobbyist guy, you know, going to be fair weather. So with a poly finish, it can withstand the weather, the water coming on it, because I have 100% of my pores filled I spray some sealer coats on that are real thin and penetrate as deep as I can into the wood and keep building those up till I can sand those smooth and have all my pores filled, and then can start building up some final coats on top and blending those in to make it look and give it some depth and show the quality of the wood properly as well. But we also have some thickness on there to protect the wood from the rain, from the elements, everything else. So it's going to be a little bit more durable to fight through that. Oil finishes are great. You seal all the pores properly, protects it there. You get out in the rain, you're going to have to do a little bit of touch up because the rain's going to take a little bit of the top finishes off, and you're going to have to touch it back up and blend it back in, and it can be done and taken care of and through time make it right. But it takes a little bit more care depending on what kind of weather and everything you've been in to keep it trued up and looking nice and all dressed up all the time.
Yeah. So it's not something you want if you're going to, you know, if you're going to touch it up all the time. I'm sure that becomes just a hassle, you know, the maintenance.
Right. And part of it, you know, some guys, I still do oil finish for some that that's what they want. You know, I want a traditional oil finish, so I'll still do them. I just know it's going to be a little bit more time consuming at the end, getting the pores filled right the way I want everything done, get the final finishes built up. And just know what they're going through. And normally, you know, just keep looking at those stocks. If I see them at times and say, you know, we need maybe do a little bit of touch up on this, and, you know, without having to totally refinish it, normally we can touch it up and blend some areas in and get a little bit more finish back on it, and doable very well. But
I know you do a lot of different work to stocks, not just building them, but you bend them and you refinish stocks and repair cracks if anybody has anything like that. How do you bend a stock, and what do you bend them for?
To change the stock fit to whether the cast is not correct, whether it's, I have some in right now that are either just off the shelf guns, but they're left-handed shooters. So we need to bend some cast on the stock, take it from a little bit of a right-handed stock or a neutral stock and put some cast on for a left-handed shooter. There's limits to how far you can bend a stock. Some stocks bend easy, some bend really hard. So it all kind of varies on particular guns. Bend with heat and pressure. The bend is going to take in the smallest area of stock, so in the wrist area, the grip area. I've used a couple methods over the years, learned to bend with hot oil from the Englishmen, the way they still do a lot. Now I use hot air. But I have jigs made that can hold the gun in and put pressure on the stock, whether I want to go left, right, up, down, how I want it to go, and get them hot, put pressure on it, then let them set for a while and keep checking them, see how they're moving, how far we're gaining. You know, once in a while you get a stock that just absolutely refuses. You put a lot of bend on it, you look in the jig and think, man, that's really going over. You take the pressure off and it comes all the way back and go, I didn't move it anything. So sometimes they go good, and other times it's a big struggle to try and gain anything out. But we're trying to change the dimensions of the stock without changing the outside aesthetics of the stock, without having to file on it, grind on it, etc., to get trying to make it fit the person that way.
Does it weaken it at all doing that?
No, it doesn't seem to. The big question I get is, do they move back? And some do, some don't. So the ones that my philosophy I've always used is, the harder I think they're going to bend, and that's why I keep checking them partway through the bending process of how they're going. The ones that seem to bend harder seem to want to come back faster. So those I will keep, I'll leave them in the jig up to a week to 2 weeks under pressure. Keep checking them throughout it, putting more heat back on it, trying to get through that to overcome the memory of the wood as much as we can to get them to stay there what we can. Others go first a little bit, you put them in and you pull them out after about 5 or 6 hours and they're moved all the way where you wanted it to. And even those I'll still put back in the jig with a little pressure on it for normally an extra day just to try and hold it there, make sure everything's still going to stay in place and work the way we want it to be.
That's crazy that that works like that. You would think it would just snap in half. If I was doing that, I'd have wood all over the floor.
Yeah. It's never a good feeling. They will. I've never broke one. You don't break them in half, but every now and then you can get a little bit of a crack forming or happening on them. Just try and push too much with the wood, what the wood is. Some of you don't know because you have that whole wrist area wrap trying to protect it from the heat. Some of you don't know till you unwrap it and go, ooh, we got a little bit of a surface crack. So then we have to go in and repair the cracks and make adjustments to the inletting to take the stress off of certain areas where maybe pushing harder on the inletting and relieve all that back to where it should be.
Now, we talked earlier about you doing everything by hand. Do you have machines that do anything for you?
Yeah, I have. I have a duplicator that starts. So I drill the holes. First thing I do, drill a hole in the buttstock, do that on my lathe with a gun drill, and then I go to a duplicating machine, which is, you know, a stylus and a router on the other side phone and run that. That's, you know, people, when they see the stocks come in, got looks like router marks on it, and that's because it is a router going over it. So use that to that stage, and then from then on, it's hand until I cut the stock off with a bandsaw and got a disc sander to grind it flat. But everything else, shaping-wise, inletting-wise, done with chisels, and then inletting or shaping-wise, hand plane, rafts, files, everything of that sort to take it down.
So you
all by hand.
You inlet everything by hand.
Yeah, the machine can get rough it out and gets it kind of close, but then I have to chisel it in, put inletting black on the receiver and start putting it together and see where the high spots are hitting and keep chiseling it out till it starts fitting in there right and laying in and better properly in the recoil area and keep moving it back till edges line up and everything lines up square.
Yeah. Do you ever see yourself going to machines or do you just like it hand done? I mean,
yeah, I see some of that. I have some other machines on order right now trying to get move up, I guess, in the age we're in. I see some of it being a learning curve, me trying to figure out how to run some of this stuff as well.
Yeah, knowing you, you're going to have a problem with that.
Yeah, so, and the biggest part I'm trying to do it for is my pattern time. Hopefully I can have patterns, more patterns roughed in a faster amount of time so I'm not spending all these hours getting ready for patterns all the time. So when I go to a shoot, you know, the only patterns I have are ones that I've gotten booked in because that's all the time I've had to try and get ready to build any extra patterns and never seem to have extra patterns made up ahead of time because it just takes so much time to keep them all going. So hopefully with the machines, I can keep ahead on that where I can then give me more time to do the checkering and the final work, everything else that all the pattern takes so much of my time that I can get some more final stocks done and give me more time in that area.
Do you like hand checkering over a machine checkering it for you?
I do, yes. Some people don't care. Some people don't realize the difference. Just been the old traditional style of hand checkering true diamonds that are cut into it. It's just a slow, tedious process, doing it properly, doing it right.
Like magnifying glasses and all kind of different stuff to do that. I don't know how you do that like you do. But it's truly, in my opinion, the most impressive part of the whole stock is the checkering. And what you've done, I mean, I've seen designs that you've put in these stocks that are just crazy, you know, different things. The grip caps. Or some of those can be custom.
Yes. I mean, it's just done different things there. And I have engravers that do engraving work for me, try and fit grip caps, but then, you know, skeletonize them and different things. And some of them just want, I've checkered the bottom of the grip with their initial in it and checkered around those and done different things. It all sounds good when you before you start, then you go, wow, this took a long time to do.
Yeah. So
3 hours later, you're touching everything up because it's just perfection of doing it that all the diamonds should be pointed up and sharp and It just takes time to get. So the initial layout of my checkering takes me about half the time, then deepening takes the other half, or about the other 30%, and then the last 15 to 20% is just going around all the borders, the edges, and making all the diamonds sharp along the edges and truing all those up as well. So that's what's time consuming to try and get all the edges right and look. And then you do some and people go, man, that hurts my hand. They're too sharp. And they start doing stuff to the tops. And it's like, if you're going to do that, don't show me what you're doing to it. It's yeah. Like, I spent a lot of time getting it to feel and look like that.
Yeah. So you want yours to feel like checkering. You don't want it to feel smooth.
It's the background I have from the custom rifles of, you know, we used to have customers and when they'd get a custom rifle and they take magnifying glasses to your checkering to make sure everything was done right and go around all the edges and go, wow, okay, this is a little extreme. So you spend all that time doing it right and doing it down through. When I was apprenticing, you know, their biggest motto was, you know, learn to do it right. You can learn to do it faster later. Learn to do it quality first, not quantity. So didn't matter how many hours learning how to do it right. And then over time, I learned how to get faster and quicker at it. But still, it's all with the quality in the back of my mind, always, you know, what needs to be turned out here and look right.
I didn't know you checkered one, and you don't refinish it after you checker it. It's just checkered and done, right?
Yes, I do all my finish work first. Some people do about half and half. I've always done all my finish work. It's the way I was taught. Finish it, then checker it. Then I'll go back and seal my checkering up with oil to protect the checkering itself. Mm-hmm. I don't spray the checkering on my poly finishes. I put oil back in it, the sealing oil, to seal those seal the diamonds in that area back up. Without filling it in, you go to spray it, and it tends to fill in all the hours you just spent trying to make them sharp, and now you filled it in with finish. But I do put finish. I don't leave it just bare wood. Go back and put sealer in it to seal the checkering and everything off.
Well, I guess if everyone's wondering why it costs so much to get a custom stock made, we just probably answered all that for you.
Yes, lots of hours.
Yeah, no kidding. You travel around most every year to certain shoots, and this year you're going to, right before Nationals, I think you're going to Westside Sporting Grounds, right, down in Texas?
Yes, yep. The week before Nationals, we're set to go there.
Are you booked there, Jim?
Working on it. Lori Daniel and her husband are working on some of their clients to be able to get me in there, and I know there's several days already booked, and then go there to be at Nationals. It helps a little bit. The fall trip is about the only time I have help. My brother from Alaska comes and helps me during those times. He has some free time then, and he's a big help. He can do my pad jobs for me and do a little bit of sanding so we can get a little bit further along in some of the processes and be able to do other work, you know, like pad work when people just need pads done. He does the ISO systems and he can sand them and does some of the finish work on the pattern so he can spray finish, so lets me go back and start on another pattern and do that for people. So it's a big help that way.
In the past, you've always had some openings for Nationals for patterns. I know you parked there with your trailer. You're there for, what, 10 days? How long are you there?
Yes, I get there on the first Saturday. Normally get there on Friday night, and they're through the following Sunday. So
yeah,
I try and shoot that first weekend, but also end up working on stuff the first weekend as well, normally through shooting and everything, and then start in hard on it on Monday through Sunday.
You've got a couple of spots open still, so if anyone needs to, if anyone wants a pattern stock, you need to get in touch with Jim.
Yeah, because we always have to know, number one, what kind of gun we're building it for, so I can have all the inletting work done and have the pattern kind of roughed out. Then the biggest thing that I always try to remember, make sure we're the right or left-handed so I can get the palm swell and the cast and everything kind of started and headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
So we have some wood to work with. So those are the main things I always just need from a customer. So we can try and get the time booked Because it never fails. Still at Nationals is the biggest one. People come up and want a pattern stock, and it's like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's not only I don't have the time, or I don't have the patterns already roughed in and ready to go as well. So try and have all those booked ahead of time and scheduled and slotted in. You always get some worked around and have to juggle around some shooting schedules, and always try and work with the shooters on that if you know they're trying to shoot, so we can get done and get some things done. Well, then they have to go shoot and come back and finish things up for them. But try and be accommodating as we can around things, and just letting them know how many hours I need them for to get everything done what we want
to
do.
You're busy at every shoot you go to, without a doubt. You can go to Jim's trailer, he's always got something he's sanding on. And you have a lot of customers also that have your stocks already. How important is it to you to be able to service those customers in a friendly manner, in a friendly amount of time while you're at these shoots? I mean, is that something you look at as being important to you?
Yes, I try. And so I know people always, you know, some approach me ahead of time, I'm going to be there. And it's like, I always try and block a little time. Normally it's later in the afternoon when I'm trying to get done with things, then have some time slotted so we can look if they're having a problem or double check things for them, and just try and book some time and have some time for them. So I follow a lot of shooters, what they're doing, and try and get feedback from them. Always ask for feedback of how things are going with them, if they're having problems or they're shooting good with it and happy with it, and or what changes or alterations or what we need to try and do. Can get a little overwhelming, and sometimes I can't get my phone answered in the middle of processes, but I try and get back with them as soon as I can in a timely manner to get everything lined up. And but yeah, I try and save time for the shooters and give back what I can to them to help them through the process if they're having a struggle or a deal.
Right.
I mean, we drop stuff and, you know, get them back out on the course when we can right away and fix things that way for them too.
Yep.
Spend a lot of, get there early a lot of days, and a lot of days they're pretty late trying to get things done to get everything processed.
Yeah, you're talking about getting there early. You know, I've stayed with you a couple of times at Nationals, and my goodness, Jim's out of the house before the rooster crows. I mean, he's sitting at Nationals when it's, you know, seems like it's 6 o'clock in the morning.
Not quite, but it's dark always when we get there, when we pull in.
It is.
See the sun come up every day.
Yep.
And normally it's set by the time we get out of there too in the evening. So it's a pretty long days, but just trying to accommodate, because that's sometimes at those shoots the only time people can come see me, can't have the time to come see me other places. So I know we've got to try and work around and schedule things with them when we can at those shoots, either Nationals or try and always work a U.S. Open, and then one or two other shoots throughout the year. I get a lot of calls wanting me to come areas and be nice, but there's only so much time I have to be away from the shop, so I pick and choose where I go. Trying to go to Will Fennell's once or twice a year, so I'm out on the East Coast, and pick another couple shoots to try and work around that certain areas that I know is going to be good and stay busy. Like this year, went to the Southeast Regional, I ended up spending 3 extra days there working while I was there while everybody else was all gone, and they're putting the course back together, and I was the only trailer there still working on stuff.
Yeah. Well, if you want an appointment with Jim to get one of these pattern stocks made, make sure you visit his website, greenwoodcustomstocks.com. Any other way to get a hold of you, Jim?
Yeah, email me there, or you can text me or call me on my cell phone. That's probably the easiest way. Text works good. I'm trying to get back to those. So the 316-734-0747.
And all that's on your website too, right?
I believe the cell phone number is. If not, you can have it down there, but I believe it is.
Yeah, okay. So,
but at least email me, and sometimes it goes to junk mail. I try and get gone through them when I can and find ones that I've overlooked there, but try and get back on those.
Well, I appreciate your time, Jim. I think we probably answered a few questions for some people, and if we haven't, they can call you and or email you or text you or whatever it is and get the answers, but I appreciate your time.
It gives them a good background on it, but then we can discuss it more in depth with everything that goes into it. But, yeah, I appreciate having me on.
Yeah, man.
It's good.
And I will see you at Nationals for sure. So I guess that's the next time I'll, no, actually I'm coming out there in July.
Yep. Yes, yeah. Sir.
I'm coming to you in July. So anyway,
that's not far off.
It's not. I just thought about
it. I got to get ready.
Yeah. So anyway, but I appreciate your time and I'll see you then.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
All right, man.